8.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's okay.
I wanna tell you time.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Delicious Talk. This is Gail Delicious Johnson, the host of Delicious Talk. That's Gladys Knight. I hope you dance. Tonight I'm doing a special show for a very special friend of mine. The topic of the show is living with cancer. And Reggie Dennis, who is a dear friend of mine, who now resides in Denver, Colorado, will discuss his plight with cancer and how he's living with it. Reggie, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm fine. You?
I'm fantastic. It's good to hear your voice.
Good. If you'd asked me that a few hours ago, I would have said I wasn't feeling good.
Oh, wow.
No, it's just one of those things that comes up. You know, sometimes you feel good and sometimes you don't.
Sometimes
all
you
in
don't.
One day, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
In fact, we got some out-of-town guests here. We meaning Yolanda, my ex-wife.
Right.
And they went to dinner and I, you know, couldn't go or didn't go because, you know, my stomach was bugging me. So,
right. Well,
go ahead.
For some of our listening audience, tell us a little bit about, tell us a little bit about Reggie.
Reggie was born in D.C., Washington, back in, as my young girl can say, 1949. Try to make me sound older than I am. And grew up in Knox Hill Projects most of my life, 12 years of my first 20, I would say. And that's probably shaped me more than anything. You know, those, and I guess I could have grew up in Berry Farms or, excuse me, Fairfax Village or somewhere else, but I know that that would shape my life was the Knox thing.
Mm-hmm.
And went to, you know, high school, Stanton and Kramer and Phelps, and been to about 4 or 5 colleges, never finishing, but been and enjoyed it.
Right.
And then came out to Denver and been out here for 30-some years and have done community work most of the time. I've been here, I'll say out of 33 years, I probably did community work 27 of those years. And,
well, how did you pick Denver? Because I'm sure you lived in other places before you got to Denver, am I right?
Yeah, I lived in North Carolina. I went to school there. I left D.C. in 76 to finish school because now I was married and thought I was smarter. So, but that didn't work. I stayed there 2 semesters, and Yolanda wanted to introduce me to her side of the family, her sister in particular. So we drove across country, stopped in Denver for a week, on our way to Seattle, and when North Carolina didn't work out, and said, well, we don't want to go back to D.C. We done that for 20-some years. Let's try something different. So we came out here not knowing anybody and other than ourselves and been here ever since.
Wow. Now, since you've been to these different places, what else was going on in your life? Because I know that you also wrote a number of books. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, in college I read this book called Man, Child, and the Promised Land by Claude Brown. He wrote about his experience growing up in Newark, New Jersey as a kid. And I thought, oh, I could do that one day, you know, write about me growing up in my neighborhood. And then and while I was in college in D.C., I got a job working in a library. So because around all those books and then my mom, she went to library school and worked for the Department of Justice as a law librarian. So books and libraries always been, you know, in our lives as opposed to all those other things. I mean, we did the other things too, but that's kind of how I kind of thought, well, maybe I want to write one day. And I've ended up writing and publishing 3 books. And I'm kind of really not a writer, you know. I'm more of a put it together, try to see how many I can sell, an entrepreneur. You know, there's people who write, who really write. You in particular, you really write. But
thank you.
I like to do the other part about it, just put the book together, see it goes from 1 page to 249, and then go out there and sell it, you know, and that's the part I like about it. So.
Now, your first book was...
Reggie's Guide to Simple and Easy Life.
Right. Now, what provoked you to write that particular book?
Well, my thing was to write about things that I failed in education.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't finish school. Drugs were the thing that kept me from finishing. And, you know, crime and those kind of things. Luckily enough, you know, I didn't go too far past number 11 precinct as far as I went. Well, you know, so I, you know, but still talk about that using my buddies and my neighbors' experience, their experience in the criminal justice system. And so I talked about things that affected me, and I thought I would go around and talk to young kids. At this time, I was like 37. You know, go around and talk to kids, but, you know, people are not interested in kids, as we know, so, and kids don't buy books, so that didn't work. So then the next book was kind of like, you know, where have all the black males gone? And then, of course, people first say, you know, jail or gay or dead or, and I said, no, I'm kind of not talking about them guys because, you know, I know them guys,
mm-hmm.
but kind of talking about people like me, you know,
mm-hmm.
What are we doing? Where are we? Then the people didn't like that either. So I came out with a novel called Meet Me at the Big Tree, and that was a tree that we had in Knox Hill, actually on Knox Street. And
mm-hmm.
when your mama sent you to the store, and she said, now hurry up and go get that bread because I'm making a bread pudding. So,
mm-hmm.
meaning don't take nobody with you because y'all be throwing rocks and running around in the woods.
Playing, yeah.
So, yeah, so we would say, meet me at the big tree. It was like a meeting place. And then mm-hmm. as we got older into girls, 12, 13, and we would tell little girls in the neighborhood, meet me at the big tree, you know. So, but Knox was only 300 houses, but each little section had its own. Because there's probably some people who I know that's been in Knox for a long time don't know about the Meet Me at the Big Tree because they didn't live within those few little houses that we had, you know, or they didn't live in a circle or they didn't live on Irvin Street. So, but every little patch of houses had their own little thing. And I lived 3149 Knox Street. And
mm-hmm.
in that block or in those few houses, we knew about the big tree. So that's how that came about.
Right. Well, I never knew, you know, when I was living up there, I didn't know about the big tree. Maybe I passed it and didn't know because no one ever told me
yeah.
to meet them at the
yeah,
big
you,
tree.
Yeah, well, they told you to meet me on at the circle. That's what they told you. Meet me down on the playground. That's what they told you.
Yeah, the blacktop or the
blacktop,
or,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Like
yeah,
that.
But like I say, just a few people, you know, I would bet you 40, 50 families knew about the big tree because that's how
mm-hmm.
it worked in that neighborhood, you know. Once
mm-hmm.
you moved outside, you know, there were four houses in each row. So let's say just five, six rows of people knew about it, and, you know, that's only 20-something houses. So, but it's funny enough, when I go by there now, it's not big anymore. You know, what used to be
right.
a big tree. It's a little tree. In fact, I got climbed up there one time as far as I could go.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, couldn't come down and stayed up there for a couple hours. You know, it's easy to go up, so it's hard coming down. Shit, and then they start throwing rocks and shit and crab apples at me. So like, come on out there, nigga. Up that tree. So I thought, well, I'm safer up in the tree than having them crab apples hit me upside the head, you know. But it was fun. I wouldn't trade it. And when I hear people say that they grew up in the best, and I say it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been better than now, you know. But
yeah.
It's like I hear people say, you know, my mom was the best. And I'm saying to them, too, you know, couldn't have been because my mom was the best. So I
well, you know, we all thought
on,
our moms were the best. You know, everybody.
Yeah, so it just really depends that, you know, so. But, yeah, we had the best of fun. I mean, I wouldn't have, shit. And that's probably why I like that song that you led off with, you know, I hope you danced
mm-hmm.
the gladdest night. Because I always danced. I never sat around and, I mean, of course, sometimes. But, you know, basically in life, I was always out there, first one out
right.
to go on, last one to go in the house. Because my dad didn't get home to two. So,
mm-hmm.
and my mom figured, well, you know, there ain't nothing I can do, you know. He'll be here by two, you know. So I was out as late as anybody else, you know. I didn't, you know, so, and I just love life. I think, too, a problem with that is I didn't which I don't think people have to, but, you know, people say give 100%. I don't think you need to, you know. Why should you, you know? I mean, you can on everything you do. You do it on some things, but, shit, I always have fun. People, you know, people on Harvard Street, you know, at that time they were a little into psychedelic drugs more than we were, you know. Come on, let's go up DuPont. Shit, come on, you know. I remember the time that Black Cow, Dip, and a few other people came by, and somebody was going to Woodstock. Come on, man, let's go to Woodstock, New York. We didn't go there. They didn't either, but that's the kind of thing. Or let's go to Philly for the night. Let's steal a car and go to Richmond and party, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So that sort of stunted my growth because I was just too much into having fun. But, you know, it's just life, and that's what life is, you know. You're supposed to have fun
supposed
at it.
To live
you
know? It, yeah.
Yeah, you don't supposed to sit back and watch it, you know. But So I'm going to spend the rest of these few months I have to continue to, you know.
Right, to live
to dance, you know.
Right. So also you're a motivational speaker.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Because I've
always
wanted to be a motivational speaker.
Well, you know what? I work for these community agencies, and I had to go out and talk to, you know, people who were giving us grant money or talk to kids or, you know, so that prepared me for that. I mean, I was really forced to, you know, most of the jobs I worked, the boss liked my personality and thought I was outgoing. And, you know, so why don't you go over there and talk about our program? And it's much easier to talk. Time to talk about people if you talk about stuff you know. So, I mean, if I'm getting up talking about, you know, some kind of science this or neutrons and, you know, I don't know shit about that, you know, so it's going to come across and I'm not going to be comfortable saying it and you're going to see the fear in me while I'm standing there. But if I'm talking about like I'm talking now or talk about things I've experienced or really know about, then it's just easy. I mean, it's just like too easy where it makes
second nature.
Yeah, but it makes some other people nervous, you know. So.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I'd be nervous, but for some reason my voice just cracks. But I can talk when I'm having my passion parties and things. I can talk. I don't have any problem with that. But
you know the subject. But even the first few minutes of passion party, don't you? It's kind of like you hear people say you got to get your butterflies in line. It takes me about, I try to prevent all that by getting there early and you know what I'm talking about and that kind of stuff. But, you know, sometimes it still take about a good minute or two to really, you know, kick it in gear, you know. I used to go to the Howell Theater a lot growing up, particularly her and I. We'd go on a Friday for years. I mean, like all through high school, my last year, junior high, we was up there. And you notice when people come out and do a show, that first song ain't their best song. It's to, you know, get into rhythm and get the nervousness out the way, check out the audience, see what they like, see if they like your outfit. You know, it's that kind of thing about speaking in public. You know, the first few minutes, you know, you're going to be kind of, you know. And see, some people, once that happen, then that turns them off and they no good the rest of the presentation where you kind of need to know that that's what's going to happen. You hear entertainers and ball players, oh, I'm nervous every time I get out there. Well, yeah, until you get kind of familiar, till they make that first hoop or, you know, or first flip or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, it's
well, I do an icebreaker when I, you know, before I do my presentation, that warms me up and it warms the, you know, the
Yeah,
so yeah, after that, it's gravy.
You really kind of want them to like you. Yeah. And what I do is I always give stuff away. I give books away. And if I got a tough audience, I know they're tough. I went up in the mountains, Steamboat Springs, rich white folks up there, you know, and I'm... And here I was going to be talking to their kids in the morning. Here, this nigga from Denver. I'm going to be talking to these little white kids. And was at a camp. You know, we spent the night and everything. And my boss always wanted me to go because, you know, she thought I was good at it, you know. And I would always start out by putting like a $20 bill in an envelope and putting it underneath the chairs. And, you know, I just kind of talk for a minute and then tell them reach underneath their chairs. And once they get that 20, no matter how much money they got, that just breaks it for them. Now, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have put a 20 over in this part of town because they'd get up and walk out the door and go spin it, you know, go get them a $20 bump, you know. But whatever it takes, and if you know your audience, you know, you this guy I know, he say he just get a thrill out of watching the people rise. He can bring them, you know, he can make them rise, not literally stand up, but he can see them get all excited, and then he'll calm them down. And he say he get a kick out of doing that with people, you know. So,
wow.
Anyway.
So, and also you... we're not going to talk too much, but you were married at one point, right?
Yeah, that was a good part of my life. In fact, one of our buddies from D.C., Andre Springs, his people is out here in Denver right now visiting. They out
mm-hmm.
at dinner. And out at dinner with my ex, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
so, oh, no, I was married 20, and that's where I spent the last night at, and the last two,
mm-hmm.
3 weeks.
You're both very civil with each other, and you still get along.
Yeah, we get along, but there's no sex, you know.
Right.
You bring that sex into that equation, then it messes it up. But as long as we don't have sex, then everything cool. And we haven't had sex in, I guess, since 95, 94. But, you know, we still friends. We share money. You know, I gave a couple bucks today, you know what I mean? More
mm-hmm.
than a couple, but I gave her a lot today. And, you know, we share money and all. Oh, no, I don't agree with people who break up with other people and I ain't speaking that nigga no more.
Yeah, then they treat them
like all you're doing
like
is burning
that.
A bridge, yeah.
Yeah.
You're burning
yeah.
a bridge that one day you wish you could cross, that you're never going to cross
yeah.
again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always nice when, you know, a married couple wants to divorce, they can be civil and still be friends,
mm-hmm.
opposed to, you know, I hate him and
mm-hmm.
I hate her, you know. I mean, for what?
Mm-hmm.
You spent all those years together
yeah.
loving each other and then, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
You know, just
I mean, that was
friends.
Your, as you girl said, I'm my boo, and all of a sudden, man, fuck that nigga, you know. Yeah, ain't none of that kind of stuff. And like my mom used to say, and I live by a lot of her saying, you know, it don't cost nothing to be nice to people. I mean,
right. We have some callers with their hands
sure.
up. We're going to call them
all
in,
right.
and then we'll get on speaking about your cancer.
Okay.
301-960, are you there?
Who is that, 301-960?
Is that you?
You don't know your phone number.
Hi, Paddy. It's you. You're
hey,
on the
hey,
line.
You know, I wasn't assigned a number. Why you ain't just called my name?
Your number came up. Some people don't
like
us to say
you,
their
yeah.
names over the line, so that's why I just said your number. But this is my brother, everybody, and we all grew up with Reggie. So Reggie's on the line, and you can speak to him and say whatever you have to say.
I'm on the radio.
On the radio, yeah, you're on the line. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You
what's up, Matt?
Hey, Budgie, what's going on? How you been?
Not a whole lot.
See, this is the second time I talked to you in a week.
It is.
Uh-huh.
I just came in, so I didn't get a chance to hear what y'all was really talking about. I was trying to get here on time, but,
okay.
you know, D.C. traffic was all the,
okay.
Construction and stuff going on around town. You don't never know where you're at no more.
Whoa.
That's true. Yeah, well, we were basically
yeah.
talking about, you know, him growing up in Knox. We haven't gotten to the cancer part of it yet, but we have another caller. So just hold on, Pudgy, okay?
All right.
301-248, are you there?
I sure am.
This must be Anthony Hooks.
This ain't me.
Oh, that is them. I didn't pick it up at first. Okay.
This ain't me. How
yes,
y'all doing?
We're fantastic.
Hey,
how
we're
you
doing?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good. Now, how's your wife? How's she doing these days?
Man, if she's doing any better, I'd scream.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good news then. All right. Okay. Well, that's good news. Glad to hear from you.
I'm telling you.
Okay. How things going with you?
Everything's wonderful, like I say.
Okay.
How's it out there in Denver?
Oh, man, it's heaven. It's the closest thing to heaven. I didn't think I would never leave. First of all, I didn't think I'd ever leave Southeast.
I hear that.
But, man, when I came out here, just couldn't believe it. And been out here since then. But it's just a nice place, you know. It's,
all right.
You really got to come to really understand it's a pretty place. Pretty.
Oh, yes,
that's
it is.
It is. Yeah,
it's beautiful. Okay, you guys hold on. We have another call on the line.
Okay.
845. Hello. Hello. 845.
Yes. Hi, Gail. You didn't think I was going to pick up.
I thought you had your mute button on.
I did. I did, the baby. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Hi, Reggie. Man, I haven't talked to you in so long.
I know.
I'm so glad to be on this show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I hope to see you in about a few weeks when I come back.
I heard. New York, you better go. All right, now. We're going to do the town up, all right?
Okay.
I'm glad that Gail invited me on the show tonight. I'm glad I'm here. And you,
okay.
I just want to say one thing, if I say nothing else tonight, and I am honored that I met you on our radio show, and you were a regular part of it, and it was just awesome. You know, my show's been on hold for a minute, but I always think about you, and I'm just so happy that, you know, I know you.
Oh, okay. Well, same here.
Thank you.
Pudgy and Anthony, this is my publisher, Marion Mimi Jacobs. She lives in upstate New York.
My brother
and another good friend of mine is on the line, on the radio.
How y'all
with
doing?
Pudgy.
I heard. Y'all have
How
some kind of accent going on there. Everybody says I have an accent. I'm outnumbered today. Yeah, I read all about Knox. I read all about Knox, and I know a little bit about it. And I wish I was back in the day when you guys were living it up, you Reggie, Gail, Reggie. All right. So I'm glad I'm a part of this. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Reggie, then we're going to get on to, you know, you're living with cancer. When was you diagnosed with it?
They thought they saw something in November that just passed in 09, and they didn't confirm until January. So I went 2 months of, you know, uncertainty.
Let me back that up. What happened that caused you to even go to the doctor and they, you know?
Well, I was having stomach aches, and I'm normally, and since I don't drink anymore, you know, usually when I drink, I have all kinds of ailments. But normally, you know, so I hadn't drank in a year and a half, and I went, well, my stomach keep bothering. And I always go to the doctor and write down a list of things. My ex, she insists, and I was one of the things. In fact, she insists so much that between doctor's appointments, she hear me make a complaint about something. She'll write it down. And the day before I go to the doctor, she'll have it all typed up. And then you make sure you get this. So and that was on the list, you know, ask about my stomach. And then they sent me over to another hospital, and they took pictures, and they found it. It was inch mass, and then it grew to 2 inches in a month.
This was before they had diagnosed you or after?
Well, they knew the size of it once they took the pictures in November, but when, you know, after they confirmed that the mass was cancerous, you know, and then they were telling me what kind of treatments I had and or that I need, and I told them I didn't want any. And,
okay, can you explain to the listeners why you didn't get the treatments?
Well, chemo and radiation is, there are two things that destroy bad cells and good cells. So you want the chemo and radiation to destroy the cancer cells, but you don't want to destroy the white cells, which are the good cells. So, and they can't control it. You know, once they push that thing in you, they know how much they plan on pushing in you, but they can't control where it kind of almost goes.
Right. What happened?
And plus, I didn't want to be sick. You know, I didn't want to spend the rest of my life. My mom died of cancer in the last month of her life. She was teaching classes and driving, and, you know, and her decision was, you know, I don't want to be like that, you know.
So she didn't get the treatment either?
No, not the second time around, no. you know, the first time around, took a hat. She was always, she was in the house, never one for being in the house. And all of a sudden, I got to be in the house and watch stories and TV. You know, that was never her thing, you know. So when it came back 11 years later, she said, no, I don't want to do that. And I was, you know, talked to her every day and saw her. And so I got to learn, well, I think that's the way I want to go, you know. And I see people, you know, looking really bad from that chemo. And that's just, you know, my personal preference. But, yeah, my time is short because of that, but I'd rather have the next few. Oh, and when I went in January, they told me I had 8 months to 19 months. That is. And now I'm on my ninth month. So, you know, you kind of keep counting and, you know. It's funny because they're building this hotel here in town and, you know, this real big, great hotel out at the airport. And it won't be finished until 2013. And now when I hear dates like that, I'll say to myself, I wonder, will I be here, you know. So it changed the way you think about when you hear dates, you know. I wonder, will I be here or, you know. Will I be here next Christmas? Will I be here to file my taxes, which is not a good thing anyway. But you're conscious of the time. You're conscious of dates. Every day is not as important as the next day, but you're really conscious of, you know, I don't want to waste.
What you do in those days.
Yeah, I don't want to waste too much time, you know. I'll give you an example. This girl and I was going to get together, and I knew I had the cancer, and she didn't. But I knew she wanted, like, a long-term relationship and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I just had to tell her because I knew she didn't want what I wanted, and she would be really heartbroken if she would have had a little piece of me and enjoyed me and I enjoyed her, and then it would have been short-lived. So I had to tell her, you know, I ain't going to be around too long, you know. And then she felt sorry for it and then wanted to give me something. I said, well, you know, I don't want no pity pussy, you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't want to, you know what I mean? Don't feel sorry for me now. Now, when I was 12 and 13, yeah, I want you to feel sorry and give me something. Now I'm a grown man. Hell no, let me talk up on it or let me, you know, be deserving of it, you know. But shit, you know, like I say, 12 and 13, I was out there looking. Please give me. So, go
what
ahead.
Type
I'm sorry.
Of, are you on any type of
medication?
Doing any type of regimen for pain or?
No,
you know,
I take Tagamif, and that's over the counter stomach medicine. And he gave me some other medicine the other day, which I don't particularly like. But no, I don't really take anything. I just changed my diet. I was really doing great, 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 meaning fruits and veggies, nothing else. And then he was saying after 6 months, well, you can put a little meat in there or you can have a cheat day. And why did he tell me that? You know, instead of one cheat day, I was having two and three. And, you know, then I started eating meat again. You know, even chicken and fish I wouldn't eat, you know. So when I went back August 2nd, he noticed there's been an increase. So it's moving again. And I thought, I'd be damned, you know. So now I'm back. Well, when the company leaves, I'll go back to eating just fruits and veggies. But fruits and veggies does the trick. I mean, really, I know it sounds too easy and simple, but that's the way our body was made, you know. So.
Yeah, so are you on any other type of...
Well, I do that medical marijuana. I think that's probably the... Are we still there? I said medical marijuana.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm saying
that
because I was on the radio show 2 weeks ago and used the word medical marijuana, and they cut me off, and we had to do this thing over again.
Well, at Blog Talk, you know, you got the floor.
Okay. But,
yeah,
the day I went and got me a fourth of an ounce, which is $82, and you go in just like a liquor store, and you just go in there and buy, you sample. They have ice cream, cookies, tea bags, butter. You know, it used to be, I tell people, it used to be a time when we were growing up and people would sprinkle weed and cookie mix and, you know, to the teacher and that kind of crazy stuff. But now what they do is they use the actual stick of butter. They sell the butter, a stick of butter for $50.
And they put marijuana in it.
Well, whatever the ingredients is for marijuana, they don't physically put the marijuana, whatever the stuff is. You
I
know what I mean?
THP or something like
that. They put that in the stick of butter. So if the cookies call for a half a stick of butter, then you use a half a stick of butter and you already have it in you. But I like smoking, you know, and all that other fancy stuff. They got lollipops. They got all kinds of shit.
With marijuana. Is this, are there different names that they
Yeah, they got names, yeah. Today I got some, what did I get today? I got some today. It was the weed of the day. But, yeah, they all got different names.
They took over weed the same way they took over numbers.
Yeah, and they took over alcohol, exact same way. And you know what? Now I pay $82 for a fourth of an ounce. But the taxes were $6. So she said $82. Okay. Well, I knew it was $82. That's why I took 90. But then when she said, you know, 88, it's like, God damn, you know. And last week they had to pay, August 1st, they had to pay $7,000 each person, you know, each store. But it's just like going in the liquor store. I'm telling you, it's hard to believe. I didn't think they talking about they thought they'd never see a black president. I ain't never thought you could go into a weed store and just buy weed all day. You know, I thought, shit, this is the bomb. Oh, man, it's the best. It's better than, you know, people out on the street. People don't even go out on the street.
Because they grow it specially for that purpose.
Yeah,
I watched the program where they grow it, especially for medicinal purposes, different from the herb that they, you know, give
they
to
get
people,
out in
but
the
you
street.
Get, yeah, that yeah. you get out in the street.
Yeah. They actually teach college classes. In fact, a college here in Colorado now have the first degree program where you grow marijuana, but you made them up and you really, you know, you do the whole, it ain't just throw some seeds in some dirt and let them grow. You know, you've matched this with this and that with that, and yeah. So that I
so
like
when,
that. Go ahead.
So when you are smoking the medical marijuana, does it ease up the pain or just exactly what, you know, what?
Yeah, it does.
It's
for that. It's mostly for chronic pain. Yeah, it's for that, easing up the pain. Now, my stomach, it works well for my stomach, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. Now, people have back problems and this and that, and I don't know how it works for that. But certainly it works for me, you know, for the stomach.
Back
pain. Oh, yeah, you can get it for back pain. If you're a Vietnam vet, Anthony Hooks, you can get it because you're a Vietnam vet for no other reason. They just passed that law.
So,
if you're a Vietnam vet,
you
can get. Yeah, you can carry it around, but you can't smoke it in your car. And if the police stop you, you can have it on you, and you can have a blunt, and you know, but you can't smoke
it. Don't you have some type of a card or something saying that you're allowed to have this medical marijuana?
Yeah, we pay the we meaning each person that gets it has to pay the state $90 a year. But it's strictly business, you know. I mean, it's strictly about the money. And people have been talking about it for years if it's going to come down that
right.
way. But it's here, and it's here to stay. And I see that D.C. just passed that law, so, yeah, y'all better get ready for it. I don't know how y'all can handle that.
Wow, that is really something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Latinos is coming across the border.
Oh yeah, shit. They the ones that's handling. Shit, when I do property management along with selling real estate, and I had to remember I got to call this guy tomorrow. But when I had an open space, this guy called me Mexican guy. You know, he called and asked, "Can I put one in there?" I asked the owner, "Say sure." You know, he pulled up in this Hummer. And, you know, Mexican mafia, you know. I mean, big money, $100 bill.
You could buy the store, though, Matt.
2 ounces is the most you can get at one time. But then you go around from place to place. You know, it's like the time we used to get Romatussin or you get all that other stuff. You just go from doctor to doctor, write your script, you know. It's the same thing. I'm registered with about 4 different places. So I can go, you know, shit, I got a damn near pound right there if I go to 4 different places, you know. But the guy that I go to, he sell, excuse me, man, this in the hood, he be selling dimes, he'll sell dime blunt, he'll sell 20 and stuff like that.
I knew that was going to happen.
And you know what? He said he make $800 a day. He sell a pound of weed just selling it little by little, you know, piecing it like that. He make $800. So I'm thinking $800 a day times 7, you know. I mean, he make like about $40,000 a month, you know, just selling dimes and 20s legally. And all these other guys run out here with all that fancy stuff. And, you know, now here this guy in the hood, he don't move, and he make the stuff. I just noticed that the one, them cameras outside his door. I mean, the police put one on the corner, you know. I'm saying, yeah, they about ready to go in there and get him.
So how do they break that with the government? Because I know they're getting something out of it. They definitely
Well, the government, they tax them. You know, like I say, August 1st, these guys had to pay $7,000. And then when they opened up initially, they had to put up like $20,000. The government is getting big money off this. It's a big thing, you know. It's about the dollar.
Okay. So now you're on that, and you also said you're taking something for your stomach as well. Does that help?
Yeah, it just kind of smooths it out, yeah. And my stomach only hurts about a couple hours a day, and it's usually between 4 and 6, and don't ask me why, but 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., I can expect a stomach ache. And but other than that, I'm just normal, and I don't have as much energy. Oh, shit. Every time I turn around, I'm looking for a chair to sit down wherever I go. and never was like that, you know. But it, and he said I'll know when it's near. I'll know because he said I'll be really tired. I'll be losing weight, and I wouldn't want to be around people. He said those are the 3 clues to let you know you're in your last days. So and none of those
well,
things
you,
are happening.
You still
now.
Want to be around people. It's just the point you're tired now.
Yeah. See, that's the way I would look. It's not that I would.
Right.
But then
you
begin to look bad, though. But, yeah, I haven't lost. I've been 165 for the last 6-7 months.
Right.
You know, but I think when people begin to lose 20, 30 pounds, I don't think they want people to see them looking like that. Well, you know, I could care less, you know. If you want to come see me, it's fine with me.
Yeah, you know, people are maybe they become self-conscious, especially if it's known that they, you know, suffer from an illness, you know, so I guess they just don't really want people to see them like that. Because my mom, mom died from cancer. And when all her hair came out, she came outside and walked around. She, you know, it wasn't like she was trying to, you know, and her head looked cute.
Mm,
she had a perfectly round head with, you know, with no hair. You know,
no
some
hair.
People's heads are messed up when they have, you know, no hair. But mom's head was cute, and she still, you know, would come out until, you know, she got to the point where she couldn't. And she never once did my mom say anything negative. She always was saying, when I get better, you know, that's the attitude that she held.
Yeah, and I think actually that's the biggest thing is, you know, the little pain that I have is nothing but attitude and feeling good about yourself. You know, that's the thing. Mentally, the whipping is more mental than physical. You know, people, I think when you hear about cancer, they afraid of the pain. But
right.
It's the mental thing that's going on. And then if they're not prepared for that mental whipping, that's going to really, you know, I've luckily saw people that passed, and I'm like my mom. But, you know, so mentally I was prepared. Because I was always one to believe, like most people, we're going to die one day. But some people just don't really believe that, as much as they happen around them every day. But mentally, that's where your battle is. So if you if you're not a person that can take it mentally, then you're going to have a rough time.
Right, because, and she basically, I mean, my mom, I can't really say that I know whether she was in pain or not, but she never mentioned, you know, ever being in any pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like maybe the last couple of weeks when she, when her, her, you know, when her body just actually was giving out, you know, everything ceased to function. And then she still didn't, you know, she never, I never heard her complain about pain or
anything.
My
mom didn't either, yeah. Because I think the pain you can control, you know, because of medication. But the mental thing is the thing that doctors can't control. I mean, they can't get you to, in your last days, you know, you don't want to hear that shit. You know, somebody trying to tell you, be positive.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think that's what keeps a lot of people holding on as well.
Right.
Because once you give up, then, you know, it seems
then
like...
Then you're gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely gone.
Next thing you turn around, you're gone. So if you keep a positive attitude and you be around positive people, you know, people support you and, you know, look out for you, then, you know, that's when you go a long way. Because when they diagnosed my mom, the doctor said that she would be dead any day, you know. And she lived actually a year after that. You know, but this doctor, this was some foreign, crazy doctor, you know, and then also some of these doctors don't even really care about certain people, races and certain, you know, things that are wrong with people. And I just believe he just said that because he just felt like saying it. But we did get her with another doctor, and, you know, we knew it was inevitable that she was going to die because the cancer was terminal. But, you know, just when you hear somebody with a positive outlook, you know, instead of that doctor saying she'll be dead any day, you know, you don't tell people, even if that was true. If I was a doctor, I wouldn't tell somebody's child that your mother's going to be dead any day, just blunt like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, people don't take it as well as you would think, you know, because people are, I'm finding out in the last 8-9 months, people are afraid to die. You know,
no doubt.
They bring that negativity to you because I'm not afraid, you know. So the thing is, they want you to be afraid because they're afraid. And I'm finding that out, you know. I'm thinking, God damn, didn't you know when you was about at least 5, 6, 7, 8, you're going to die? I mean, what, you know, it ain't like you're the only one in the world going to die. You know, then you'd be upset because, damn, I'm leaving everybody. Well, no, it's going to be a gang of people going the same day you go, you know. But and then what I notice people do now, when they say, how you doing, they really mean, how you doing? You know, and I don't like that. You mean, how I'm doing? God damn, I just saw you yesterday. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You know, they, and I think what they're doing is trying to get a reading, which is okay, but they're trying to get a reading so they'll know what to expect if it actually comes through. Yeah. But, you know, another thing I know, the doctor told me 4 adults out of 10 have cancer, and 2 of that 10 knows about it. So there's 2 people out of the group of 10 that have cancer and don't know, you know, so they don't have to get that mental whipping that, let's say, we would get, you know. So it's best not to know, you know. But anyway, it's been a learning experience for me, you know.
So what is your
learning?
I'm learning
about people, you know, not as
right.
me, but people.
Right. What does your day to day look like? What do you do when, you know, every day? Because I know you're still, you know, doing the real estate thing and stuff like that. So what does your every day look like?
Busy. You know, I started the day at 8 and stopped at 6, which is 10 hours. So I'm busy now. And I'm not busy on purpose, just, you know, not to think about it, but just,
right,
that's
just...
Damn, after all this time, I'm really busy. You know, why couldn't I have been busy 4 or 5 years ago as I am now, you know? But I'm much more busy now. And it could be that I'm trying to, you know, be busy and, you know, just don't really realize it. But every day is, I think about it every day, of course, but not like at first I thought about it. I mean, like 5 minutes couldn't go by without me thinking about it. Now, it's not that often, maybe once or twice an hour. that I think about it. You know, like I say, if like they building that building, I'm thinking, oh, will I be around in 2013? You know, so things make you think about it.
Right.
But, you know, it's okay. I'm not afraid, and I'm.
Well,
it's
that's
okay.
That's,
I don't have no problem with it. You know.
Right. That's a good attitude to take. But you know what I thought was. You know, because I've lost, you know, people that was dear to me, my mother and father. And it's not basically so much of them dying and they're being out of their pain. What it is, they left people behind that, you know,
right.
are suffering, you know, because
right.
they're gone. You know, so, you know, like everybody said, they're in a better place. Well
they
still
are.
Here.
Yeah,
but we're still here, and
behind,
we're the ones
yeah.
that are suffering. You know, we're the ones with the pain now that they're gone. So do you feel that, you know, I know that your wife, your ex-wife is definitely going to, you know, feel that. I'm going to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So how is
but
she
actually,
take?
In our case, with her, you know, there's things that we want to do because she know that there's not going to be another man around or another person around to do things, you know, like she wants to sell three of her properties and she wants to move and she just bought a car this week. So she's, you know, kind of getting prepared for me not to be around and she want to do things while I'm around because, you know, and people going to treat it different, you know, because they know her because of me. And if I'm gone, then she can't just pick up the phone and ask for help because people, you know, shit. You know,
well,
ready.
Is she going to stay in Denver or is she
Oh,
ready?
Yeah. She's going to stay here, yeah.
Oh.
And her, you know, and quite frankly, her people in Seattle, they, like a lot of people, ain't going to take care of them. You know, they got money and they, not because they got money, but they don't have time for that. I hate to say it, you know. I actually told her. And she really realized, well, you're right about that. They're not going to, you know, they ain't going to take care of her. You know, they'll put in a home and, you know, take care of that way, pay the bills because they load it. But they ain't going to take care of her the way people want to be taken care of. And now that's another good thing about this. Not a good thing, but to have somebody in your life like her or whatever spouse you have or whatever partner because, going through this alone, and we go to the doctors, I would say half the people that sit up there in the waiting room and everybody in there for cancer, just different kind.
Right.
You know, they don't have nobody with them.
Right.
And I'm thinking, how can you go through this and don't even have nobody at least to, you know, drive
yeah, with,
you there
yeah,
and talk
we went
to
with
you?
My mom for all her appointments.
Yeah, but boy, you know, and I noticed this really, really kind of cute girl. The last time I went in, I'm thinking, all these men you be hanging out with, and ain't not one of them up here sitting up here with you, you know? Because I see around town, you know, I mean, her face was a million, so was mine to her. And she always got men around her, but she's sitting up there with her cancer going through that by herself. And just, you know, and that's the good thing about it. I don't have to worry about that.
Right.
Lon
right.
has been to every appointment. I mean, every appointment. You know, anything got
well,
to
that,
do
that's
with,
what you need. You need that support if it's just yeah. one person, you know, just as long as someone's there to, you know, be there, you know, to give you that support because we need that.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
You really don't need a bunch of people.
Right.
You just need one good person that's going to be there, you know.
Right. Especially a loved one. Now, what about you have brothers and sisters. What about your brothers and sisters? How are they taking it?
Well, you know, my mom had cancer. My dad had cancer. My brother has it now. His came back, and I have it. So it's pretty much you're going to get it, too, you know, if you're in my family. My sisters don't have it, but then I got two nephews. So, you know, it looks like it's something that's going to, you know, it's genetics, let's say with us. But we've had four people with it, so kind of used to it when they get around 50, 60, and someone picks up the phone and say, you know, I got cancer. My brother has prostate. I got the liver. My mom had ovarian cancer, and my dad had lung cancer, you know. So we all had four different kinds of cancer. but we all have cancer, you know, and that's a good sign, too, that you really need to take care of yourself. If you got relatives or, as they call them out here, aunties or them kind of people, you know, take, you know, just keep in mind that you may be carrying that genetic gene.
Well, I honestly hope not, but I can say that my mom and her sister and two of her brothers, they all died from cancer, but they all smoked. Mm-hmm. And one of her brothers that didn't smoke, he died from Alzheimer's. So I, you know, I just, you know, hope that, you know,
well, have
that
you,
not genetic.
Do you smoke or not now?
No.
So,
no,
okay,
no,
I
haven't smoked in about 20, 30 years now.
Okay, and see, I still smoke one or two cigarettes a day along with my medical marijuana. So I smoke more medical marijuana than I do cools, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, the drinking was the key for me, he was saying that. And they've been telling me that for years, you know. Your liver, they be poking my stomach. Oh, your liver, oh, your liver. I mean, you know, for years, 30, 40 years, oh, your liver, you know. So it's something that, you know, if I didn't take care of it back then, meaning if I didn't drink as much as we drink, then maybe I wouldn't have this problem. But, you know, we got to die of something. And,
right. Well, we have 3 minutes left. If anybody has any last comments or any questions that I'd like to ask Reggie, feel free to ask.
When are you coming to town?
The 10th of September, and I'm staying to the 22nd. Yeah, I'm going to be there. And I really do want to go to New York for, if not but a day, because this is my... I ain't going to say farewell tour, and I say that. I don't say that, but it could be my farewell tour. Shit.
Right.
You know, so I need to go from New York to North Carolina and visit people. You know, I mean, I need to do that, you know.
Okay.
So, but, yeah, it'll be then, and I just got a couple dollars, so I will be able to come. So, that's that's when I'll be there, 10th through the 22nd.
What do you think... Where do you want to be buried at, there or here?
Well, I don't want to be, actually. You know, I want my ashes to be, of course, half in City Park here in Denver, and the other half up at Knox. And don't want no service, you know. I just want to go away. I don't want, you know, memorial service, and I don't want nothing in the paper. You know, you're just going to get a phone call one day from somebody and say, yeah, you know, he gone. But you're not going to read about it, or you're not going to, you know, I'm just going to go just like I came, you know, without a fuss.
How are the arrangements going to be made that to be done?
Well, Yolande, she's going to carry it out. She knows that when I go away, then she's going to have them take me straight to the... be cremated, and she's going to go in a couple of days, pick up the urn, and half of it she's going to bring to D.C. and scatter over Knox, and the other half she's going to leave here in Denver, and we used to love the park. And in fact, we were there today, so, and she's just going to sprinkle it there, you know, so, but it's not going to be no cost and burden on her, and it's not going to be, you know, you ain't going to read about it, and it ain't going to be, you know, none of that stuff, you know. It's just going to, you know, I was
hey,
gonna,
we have.
Go ahead.
We have 39 seconds left, and I do appreciate everybody who came out.
Okay.
My next show, the 27th, will be Do White Men Fear the Black Women That Black Men Leave for White Women?
Oh.
So that's on the 27th. My show airs every other Friday.
Okay.
Say that again.
So,
what?
My next show is going to be Do White Men Fear the Black Women That Black Men Leave for White Women? Everybody, thanks for coming. Thanks, Reggie. I love you.
Okay, I love you.
And I'm going to be keeping in touch with you.
All righty.
Thanks,
I'll see
Anthony.
See you guys in
thanks,
about
Pudgy.
Three. And Mimi, we'll hope to see you too for sure.
All right.
So we'll see everyone in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.